Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
The Mark Cox Shortlist, brought to you by Eagers Heating and Air Conditioning.
Thank you all for being here as we take historic action to deliver a future of safety and security for Americans.
The executive order is a good thing.
It's devastating to be a police officer right now.
If there is no accountability, there will be no change.
This deprivation of statehood is unjust.
We're not going to allow people to take the law into their own hands. It just doesn't work.
You know, the left has just gone off a deep end.
In many ways, that's the truth. Glad you are here with us, Mark, here, of course, Tricia, Denise, Susan, and we're having a great day. It's Wednesday. We're happy. Beautiful weather.
Yeah.
It sounded like couldn't you weren't sure better. That you were Mark.
Am I here? Who am I?
Mark here? Mark
is here? Mark here?
Anybody? Mark? Anybody seen Mark?
Who's talking?
Wish I was in Tulsa, actually, getting ready to go to that big Trump rally out there, along with a million of my closest friends. Driving the left insane on that one, too, because what are we going to do? You can't get that many people together in one place. It only holds 19,000. There have been 10 times that many people protesting in streets around America, but that's not a problem.
It kind of depends on what you want to do as to whether or not public opinion will allow you to gather large crowds.
Right.
That's very true. This is what the vice president had to say yesterday. Cut 21, please.
Every day we're going to continue to put the coronavirus farther in the past. We're going to safely reopen America, and we're going to have a great, great election this fall.
Yeah, and the vice president's talking about to reopening America. Of course, what's the headline today? Cases are increasing across America. I took my mom to get tested yesterday, right? More people are getting tested. These urgent care centers are offering tests. The key here is not the number of people who test positive. It's the number of people who end up dying or in severe respiratory distress. As the governor of Texas pointed out, where their numbers are up, the vast majority of people that have tested positive were under the age of 20. And health-wise, that's not the age group you have to worry about if the numbers bear that out, right?
I also wonder if those numbers include, and I haven't read this, I'm just genuinely asking. I mean, there's people and jobs and places where it's not just like get a test and you're done. It's they test you every day or you're tested,
weekly, once a week
or something. Yeah. So does each one of those count as a test or is it? I'm assuming it would.
I would think. I mean, it's a new case added. I don't know.
Well, nobody's distinguishing between asymptomatic and actual complications with it. And it's all lumped into a big number.
So one person could be like 50 tests.
Yep. And not have any symptoms.
Right.
At all.
We're having to learn a new word this morning.
What's that?
Dexamethasone.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
It's a steroid.
Okay, Tricia, we need a new name.
Frank. Okay. So they've been using Frank over in the BBC reported this morning. They've been using this steroid. It's apparently a really old drug, been around many years, and they've had tremendous success in certain cases with that, right? Of course, in the United States this week, the FDA rescinded its use of hydroxychloroquine for the off-label use, it sounds like, of treating COVID, even though we've got a doctor down here in Jefferson County that had 100% success rate, survival rate, using hydroxychloroquine. He said he's still not sure. He read the thing from the FDA. I sent it to him. He said he's still not sure it would prevent him from using it if he wanted to on a patient. So he read it differently than I did.
Yes, there's got to be, I don't want to get all conspiracy wonk too deep into it, but somebody's worried about getting paid there.
Yeah.
You know, like there's got to be a reason. I don't know what it is, but there's got to be some reason we can't celebrate accomplishments like that.
Thank you.
On a grand scale.
Thank you. We got Governor Mike Parson coming up at the bottom of the hour, but right now let me get to my guest, please. Charmaine Yost joining us, a vice president at the Institute for Family, Community, and Opportunity at Heritage. Good morning to you, Charmaine.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. We were just talking about COVID. Imagine that. And the supposed increasing cases around the country. Will we have to shut it down again, is what CNN asked this morning.
Well, it's super interesting, isn't it, how it just kind of disappeared. I think that, you know, as you were just saying a minute ago, the whole idea that people can go outside if it's a cause that people approve of, as opposed to making a living, for example.
And I don't know if it's a testing issue, if it's simply the fact that more people are being tested. I've wondered before if we reported every day the number of flu cases during flu season, would people be shocked by that? Because we don't normally do that. Normally, by the end of the flu season, you say, well, hey, looking back, this season we had 6 million people infected with influenza A. Please get a flu shot. We don't report those numbers daily.
Right, right. And you know what, Mark? I mean, there's two stories that are important coming out of how we've gone through COVID so far that are really relevant for people's fears about moving forward. The first is that the American healthcare system proved itself to be more resilient, more robust, and able to handle things much better than the doomsayers were saying on the front end. The healthcare system was not overwhelmed. They did have some issues in New York where they were hit the hardest, but we rallied. We sent a boat up there, which they didn't even use. And then secondly, you know, you guys have been talking about hydroxychloroquine and dexamorphine. Golly, Mark, you're just setting the bar high for me.
We're calling it
Thank
Frank.
You. Yeah. Thank you. I'll call it Frank. Okay. Setting the bar high for me here on a Wednesday morning. But in any event, as we've been saying all along, you know, the search for not just a vaccine, that's a whole other issue, but treatments that work and approaches, the American ingenuity and resourcefulness is finding ways. And so I think we're in a much better situation than we were, you know, just weeks ago. And so is it over yet? No, no, it's not. We still have to be prudent. We still have to be wise. But that doesn't mean we have to be fearful and it doesn't mean we can't go back to work.
Yeah, thank you, which is what I know you guys at Heritage have been working on that. We've talked about that the last couple of weeks. The economy has bounced back tremendously. The downside of that is political for some folks. I mean, I think that plays a role in this about warning of a second wave. What are you guys discussing in your task force?
Well, as you know, we released our final report on Monday, which we're all really excited about. And frankly, I think it was really providential timing for it to come out right now as we're kind of in a little bit of a pause, if you will, where the riots and everything distracted people from the ongoing reality of coronavirus. And now people are looking forward and they're worried about the next wave. And I think it's important to take a moment, take a deep breath, and take stock of where we're at and go back to the basics that we've learned, which is that you can go out, you can go back to work, but you have to be smart, you have to be prudent, and follow good public health guidelines. You know, for example, that includes, yes, we believe you should be wearing masks. you should be washing your hands, just like you and I have been talking about for weeks now. Just some real common sense kinds of things help us move forward. We know now, for example, that it was nursing homes that were hit the worst. It's our beloved elderly with the comorbidities. These are the people that we have to shift our attention to. The more we waste our time being worried about the entire population, we don't put enough energy into protecting the people who are truly vulnerable and truly at risk.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, among the other things that you guys called out in this report is executive powers of some governors and overreaches that we've witnessed during this. These are things moving forward that that need to be addressed as well. I know that Mike Pence pointed that out as well.
Right, right, exactly. I mean, people have to get back to work. You made the point that we're starting to see really positive, optimistic signs, and boy, do we ever need it, right? No more killer bees or murder hornets. We need the optimism. I'm firmly convinced, frankly, that the way that this virus has hit minority communities harder than everybody else, both from the perspective of health, but also the economy. I think that's an underlying factor in terms of a tinderbox with people's frustration that is feeding into the unrest and the riots.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. And then there's the issue of we found ourselves at a disadvantage, Charmaine, because when it comes to getting our pharmaceuticals, we discovered suddenly something many people have been warning about for years, but it fell on deaf ears. They're all made in China.
Right, right. No, absolutely. And that's one of the things that the commission talked about and put in the recommendations, is that we need to take a look at that, and we need to be taking steps to protect our supply chain. And frankly, healthcare is part of the area that I work on at the Heritage Foundation, and it's a project that we're going to be looking at specifically, is what our supply chains look like and how we can better protect them moving forward so that we're ready for the next pandemic.
I believe, and I could be wrong about this, but it's highly unlikely, I believe that I remember back during the Clinton administration in the early 90s, there was a move afoot then to move drug production to China because it was cheaper. They wanted to get it out from under U.S. pharmaceutical companies, get these things made in China where they could import them back into the country at a lower price. They thought that was one of the answers to the price of drugs. And now we see the chickens coming home to roost.
Well, and, you know, another thing that I hope will come out of all of this, and this is actually another recommendation that's in the commission report, is that there's been a real spotlight that China's not happy about on their human rights records. And the, you know, how are things so much cheaper coming out of China? You and I both know it's because of their because of the oppression that they visit on their people and on their labor force. And so, you know, that's one issue, but also, you know, their civil society, they did not have the same kind of response to this virus that we did, both from a perspective of First Amendment and people being able to speak out about it, their unwillingness to communicate to the rest of the world what we were going to be facing. And, you know, we're arguing that we've got to pay serious attention to that moving forward. This is a real issue. It's not just, you know, the world is a much smaller place than it used to be. We can't just say, oh, the Chinese are oppressing the Uyghurs. You know, that's something that's happening over there. No,
yes.
It's something that affects all of us.
Yes, and thank you for pointing that out. Charmaine Yost is my guest with the Heritage Foundation this morning. Charmaine, I pointed this out a little earlier today when we first went on the air. We still have a major United States city this morning that's occupied. We're waking up in an America where we are ceding six city blocks to what the mayor there describes as an expression of democracy, but she'd feel far differently about it if it were a group of pro-gun, if it was a pro-gun group who occupied six city blocks demanding the city change its gun laws. She would have cleared that place by now, but they're not doing it.
Right. I mean, I guess you saw that tweet of hers where she, you know, punched back at the president and said, you know, why are you so afraid of democracy? And it's like, wow, that, you know, you look up in the dictionary, that's not what democracy looks like. You know, in the hypocrisy of it all, of you know, they're putting up barriers, which amounts to a border. They're open carrying guns. And then her own police chief saying that there's violence and rapes going on in there that they can't get to. I mean, the hypocrisy of it is just absolutely stunning. And, you know, here's the thing. It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out politically. I personally wish that when you have an American demonstration like we've seen of protest, of people that I actually was able to physically see some of the marchers in D.C., and an awful lot of them were praying and peaceful and well-meaning. That's the best of America, and we should have a conversation coming out of that, as opposed to these people who are hijacking that moment and doing these kinds of crazy things like they're doing in Seattle.
Yes.
You know, we should be pressing and saying, okay, you know, what are the constructive things that can be done? Like the president's executive order yesterday, where he was emphasizing making a move towards community policing. There are things that reasonable people can agree on that we should be discussing and moving forward to. And that's what's really troubling to me, is that you see, you know, these people doing this kind of circus thing instead of reasonable conversation.
And any thoughts on this? There's a Rasmussen poll out that I just saw this morning, and I was stunned by what is in this Rasmussen poll this morning. And I don't know how we ever get past this in this country. We talk about the divide and people who just can't look at the sky and agree whether or not it's blue or green. I mean, it's that bad. 49% of all Democrats polled in this Rasmussen poll, 49% think anyone who would vote for President Trump is a racist.
Right.
Fully one half of the people polled by Rasmussen for this report think if you support the sitting president of the United States, you are a racist person. That's unbelievable.
Well, you know, this is a symptom, or not a symptom, but an outcome of toxic dialogue that we've had and the people who were unwilling to accept the results of the 2016 election. And, you know, some of this is on the president, too. The speech that he's going to give this weekend, I think, is going to be really important. And everything we're hearing is that he's taking it very seriously in terms of communicating an agenda. Of his speech yesterday at giving the executive order, there with family members of people who suffered at the hands of police violence. I mean, he is taking steps to try to counter this narrative of racism coming from his administration, and he needs to, because, you know, that's very troubling.
It's a steep hill for him, for all of us to try to overcome at some point. And, you know, I'm sure the 24-hour news cycle certainly hasn't helped that at all.
Right, right. Well, you know, just I got into politics, Mark, as I imagine you over on your side in journalism, because I really cared about issues. And I loved growing up in my home. We used to argue about things around the dinner table in a lively and engaging kind of way. And that's, you know, that's the best of our American heritage, is we do have freedom of speech. We have the ability to argue about things. We can even do it at a high decibel level if we need to.
Right.
But we should be able to do it in recognition of the humanity and good faith of the person across the table.
Love it. I love that thought. Charmaine Yost, thanks so much for your time, and have a great week.
You too, Mark.
You bet. Heritage.org, at Charmaine Yost. That's Y-O-E-S-T if you want to follow her on Twitter. Some common sense there. This poll, we'll get it. We'll talk a little bit more about this later. This poll from Rasmussen out this morning. They polled 1,000 Americans. And adults under 40 are more likely than their elders to believe that most Americans are racist, and that racism refers only to discrimination by whites. This is some of the polling in here is shocking, what people think in America. Quick break here. I've got Governor Mike Parson coming up to talk about the reopening of the state. It's coming up right after this. And Lewis Reed at the top of the hour on his new plans for the St. Louis Police Department.